Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's June the 18th in Parshas Acharemos. We're on page 648. We finished the parak. We finished chapter 17, parak Yud Zayin, last time. However, the last few verses still need to be explained. Plus, we're going to go back and explain more about the law, the prohibition of eating blood. So let's start with ending off the paragraph here to understand what the end here is talking about. Then we'll go back to the discussion of blood. So Pasuk Tezvav, verse 15, reads, V'chol nefesh asher tochal nevela utreifa. Anybody who eats nevela, nevela is an animal that has not been slaughtered properly, and treifa is an animal that has a defect that renders it a treifa. We'll talk about that in a minute. Bo'ezrach uvager, in the Jews who are born Jewish and the converts, if the person would do that, v'chibes begadav, person needs to immerse their clothing, v'rachatz b'mayim, and also immerse his body in water, v'tamei ad ha'erev, and he is tamei till evening, v'tahir, and then he becomes tohar. V'im lo yichabes u'v'asaro lo yirchatz, if he does not either immerse his clothing or his flesh, v'nasav, oh no, he will carry his sin. Now, let's explain the second thing first. It's not sinful to be tamei. One is allowed to be tamei for long periods of time. There's nothing wrong with that. We are all tamei today, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with being tamei. However, there are things that one cannot do when they are tamei, as we've spoken about before. One cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash. One cannot eat kadshim, cannot eat karbanos. So the intent of this pasuk is, if a person who is tamei and does not take steps to become tahar, then goes into the Beis HaMikdash or consumes a karban, then v'nasa avano, he will carry his sin. So this doesn't mean it's that he will carry his sin for being tamei, it's for being tamei and doing that which one is not allowed to do when they are tamei. That's the intention of this last pasuk. Now, the pasuk Tezvah, verse 15, essentially says if one eats one of these items, nevela or tereifa, then they become tamei. Now, nevela, as we said, is an animal or a bird that has not been slaughtered properly. An animal and a bird both need slaughtering, proper shechita, as opposed to a fish, where there's no shechita. One just eats fish, there's no need to shech the fish. So that's a nevela, is an animal or a bird that is kosher but not slaughtered properly. And a tereifa is an animal or a bird that has a certain set of defects that would render it a treifa. Now, the Gemara, really the Mishnayos, discuss which defects would render an animal or a bird a treifa. And most of them have to do with serious defects to major organs. A hole in the lung, a hole in the brain, a hole in the heart, a hole in the stomach, things of that nature. There are other ones as well that are not that obvious, but most of them you speak to any doctor and they will tell you that defect is a pretty serious thing. And you know, most of the trefos that are mentioned, there is an opinion in the Gemara that gives a rule of thumb for trefa, that it is a defect. It's not all defects like this, but every type of trefa is a defect that the animal will not live out the year. It won't be able to last a year with this particular defect. That doesn't mean that every defect that an animal cannot live out the year is a trefa, but every trefa an animal cannot live out the year. That's according to one opinion. There's another, the others, that is really though in dispute in the Gemara. But that is one opinion in the Gemara. So we're talking about defects that can at least theoretically fit into that category that the animal would not be able to live out the year in that state. Now, an avela, an animal or bird that was not slaughtered properly, or a trefa means it was slaughtered properly, but then we discover that it has this defect, those animals are not kosher. One cannot eat an avela, one cannot eat a trefa. If one does, there's an avera for eating it. It's a sin to eat an avela, it's a sin to eat a trefa. It's not kosher. The Torah here is not concerning itself with the prohibition of eating it. The Torah here is concerning itself with, does the eating of it make you tame? That's the point that the Torah is focused on. And if it does make you tame, then if in that state you go into the Beis HaMikdash or eat a karban, you'll get an avera, not for eating the nevela or the trefa, that's a separate discussion. You'll get an avera for having become tame and gone into the Beis HaMikdash or eaten a karban. Yeah.
So is this something that happens in, like, immediately, like Sa'aras, that Hashem, because who would know if you don't tell somebody?
And no one would know but you. No one's going to know.
People could live with that.
No one's going to know.
But there are other times, like Lashon Hara or something, where God makes it very
that's,
obvious.
That's true.
But not with this.
Not with this. No. No one will ever know but you. No one will ever know. Now, the Gemara, really, the Mishnayos explain that actually this Pasuk, Tesvav 15, is very, very limited. It's very limited. Are you schmoozing too much?
I said, what did you say to your wife?
So, we're putting a mechitza there now. Okay.
So, I should move that for that. So it's really a very limited pasuk, meaning that normally eating a tame item does not make you tame. Eating something tame does not make you tame from the Torah. The touching something can make you tame, lifting something can make you tame, depending on the type of item that it is. But eating it does not make you tame. Now, how do you eat it without lifting it or touching it? So let's say someone would pick up the tame item, and you'd open your mouth, and the person would put it all the way back in your mouth, and all you would do is swallow it. So you neither touched it, because touching means with the outside of your body, nor is that considered lifting. Because all you did was swallow, that's not called lifting. Once it's internal, it's considered to be obliterated. It's not considered to be in existence anymore. So swallowing a tame item does not make you tame, normally. Now rabbinically it does, but not from the Torah. From the Torah there is no tuma for swallowing an item other than this. This is the one case of the Torah where swallowing something can make you tame. And Chazal, our sages, explain, it's only talking about one very specific case. It's talking about an velas of tohar. Meaning, it's talking about a kosher bird, only a bird, kosher bird that has not been slaughtered properly. An avela of a bird. That's all we're talking about over here. An avela of a kosher bird. That's the only one that will make a person tame by swallowing it. So Chazal say, but doesn't it say the word trefa? What about if the bird was slaughtered properly, but it's got a defect in the internal organ? So Chazal explained what this pasuk means to say is this. A nevela of a species that has the concept of trefa. That's what it means. A nevela, not slaughtered properly, of a type of species of bird that is subject to the trefa laws. A non-kosher bird is not subject to the trefa laws because it's irrelevant whether it's a trefa or not. It's not kosher anyway. So the nevela of a type of bird that is subject to the trefa laws. What type of bird is that? A kosher bird. But we're not talking about a trefa kosher bird. We're talking about a nevela kosher bird. So the only thing this pasuk means is that you have a kosher bird, a chicken, that was, instead of slaughtered, was bludgeoned and killed in that manner. Then that chicken is tameh, because it's an nevela. It will make you tameh by swallowing it. And it's the only type of tuma that one gets by swallowing it rather than by touching it or by lifting it. By swallowing it one becomes tame. So this is a nevelas oaf tahar, a very specific case, a nevela, non-slaughtered oaf bird tahar that is kosher. That's what this pasuk tesvah verse 15 is talking about, and then of course tezayin as well, verse 16, which is just piggybacking on verse 15. That's the only thing this is talking about. So that's why last week when we read it very quickly at the end there, we couldn't just leave that. Got to come back and explain what we're talking about over here. Okay, so that ends that paragraph. But we have to go back and discuss a little bit about the prohibition of eating blood. We're going to discuss more about it when we get to Parashas Kedoshim, which is the next parasha in the Torah. But let's use the opportunity here to get into some of the rules of koshering meat and the way we handle it, how we handle the prohibition of eating blood. Now, the Kolel did make a presentation on this last summer. Some of you may have been there, and you may have some background on your own in this. But we're going to try to cover as broadly as we can this issue of eating blood. So obviously, if there's blood from slaughtering an animal, there's a lot of blood when one slaughters an animal. The slaughtering involves severing the carotid artery, and that produces a lot of blood. And if one would drink that blood, which it sounds revolting, but if one would do so, then it would be an avera of eating blood. So our meat, the kosher meat that we buy, that's not the issue. They've already cleaned off the blood. When you buy meat in the store, it's not dripping in blood. And that even non-kosher meat, that's not appetizing. And it's cleaned off and it's, it looks good. So the issue that we deal with when we buy our meat is the internal blood. The blood that still remains inside the meat after the animal has been slaughtered and the animal has been dismembered and skinned and all of that, and the meat has been cut up into sizable pieces that are sold, and there's blood inside of the meat. So that is the blood that we deal with when we talk about koshering an animal through salt or through broiling. That's the issue that we're talking about, is the blood inside the meat. Now, according to the Torah, if you have a raw piece of meat that has not been salted, and the blood on the surface of the piece of meat has been washed off, so it looks fine, it's just raw meat, according to the Torah, it is perfectly permissible to take a bite out of that meat and eat it with its blood. The blood inside of that meat is not yet prohibited. Why is that? Because the blood only becomes prohibited when it moves. Now, all blood moves. It's a circulatory system, right? So the blood is always moving. But this means moves after death. Now, blood may still move a little bit after death just because it's residually moving from when it was moving while the animal was alive. But after that residual moving stops, there's death and the blood stops moving, then the blood is permitted unless that blood moves. Now, moves doesn't mean moves an iota. It means moves in a halakhically recognizable manner. So the blood has to move in order to become not kosher. A simple raw piece of meat, which has blood embedded in it, that blood is not considered to have moved halakhically, and therefore that blood is kosher. And one could take a bite out of a raw piece of non-salted meat, and that would be fine.
So why do we go through salt and wash?
It's because if you ever have me over to your house, I hope you will not serve me raw meat. That's why.
Okay.
Because this is only going to be raw meat is going to apply to. That's why.
So, if you were eating a rib steak, it was rare?
Rare is not raw.
Got it.
Okay, so now let's talk about once you apply heat to the meat.
I was going to have a conversation with my blessed mother, who's been gone for 30 years, because she always used to cook everything to death to get all the blood out.
Oh, okay, well, hold on. Well, you may still have to have that conversation.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so hold on. Now, once you apply heat to the piece of meat, so heat causes things to move. He causes, as you know, if a person gets a bruise, so you ice it up, right? Because you're trying to reduce whatever movement is going on in order to reduce the swelling. Heat makes things move around. When you apply heat to a piece of meat, then that causes the blood internally to move. And once the blood moves, now it is no longer kosher. And you got to get rid of all of it. You can't leave blood in the meat once you've applied heat to it. So it doesn't matter how well done or rare you like your meat. Either way, you're cooking it. You're not eating it raw. You're applying heat to the meat. And you're heating up the meat. Once you've heated up the meat, the blood has moved, and now the blood is not kosher anymore.
Right.
What's that?
So my mother was right?
Well, hold on.
Oh, nice.
Now, there's... Even if you heat up the meat and you cause the blood to move, that would not be a problem if the blood will move and drip out of the meat, because you're getting rid of the blood. So that would be okay. So if you take blood and you roast it over an open flame, you take meat and you roast it over an open flame, you are causing the blood to move, but it will drip out of the meat onto the flame. It drips out. That's what happens when you roast things. So there, even though you have not salted the meat is bland. Nevertheless, even though you're applying heat to it, it's okay because the heat causes the blood to move and that blood drips out of the meat and it is fine. The Gemara even allows for the possibility that maybe some blood that did not drip out of the meat, but the Gemara says that blood would not have moved. That if it moves in the roasting process, it will drip out. If it does not drip out, it didn't move, and it would be permissible to eat it. So if you're interested in roasting your meat over an open fire, then one would not need to have salted meat. Even unsalted meat would be fine, because whatever blood moves will drip out. The minhag is to apply a little bit of salt to meat that is being roasted, not to roast it completely bland, but to add some salt, but not nearly in the quantities that are used in order to kosher meat when it is salted. People who have a low sodium diet, so kosher meat becomes a problem because of all the salt that has been added, that has been used to kosher the meat. So one solution to that is instead of eating meat that has been salted, but rather to eat meat that has been roasted over an open fire to get out the blood. Again, a little bit of salt is added, but not so much, and therefore it's a completely different process. The problem when you boil meat or even roast it, but in a pan, is that the blood will come out, but then the meat is sitting in its own blood, or it's sitting in water that has the blood of the meat in it. So the blood gets recycled and goes right back into the meat. Maybe not the same way that it was before, but it moves around, and the blood is now back in the meat as it was before. It does not just drip out onto the fire and drip away, but rather it gets put right back into the meat when you boil the meat. Or if you roast it in a pan that's holding the meat, the blood will drip out. You'll have a pool of blood that the meat is sitting in. So the blood is coming out. The blood is being reabsorbed into the meat. That's why we need to salt our meat. We salt our meat because most of the time when meat is served, it is not served roasted open over an open fire. It is served either roasted in a pan or boiled. In a chalent, it's being boiled. In a typical roast that's served, it's roasted in a pan. And therefore, the blood, it becomes a problem. So therefore, we have to go through a salting process to get rid of the blood prior to boiling, prior to roasting in a pan. And that's the reason for malicha, that's the reason for salting. When the meat is salted, it is salted on a kli minukav. Kli minukav means a utensil with holes in it. Because the whole purpose of the salting is that the blood should drip out but not have the meat sit in its own blood. Then you've just created a problem, just like we talked about with boiling the meat or with roasting it in a pan. You want to salt it in a way that you'll get rid of the blood, similar to roasting over an open fire. So by by salting it in a clean minukave utensil that has holes in it, then the blood drips out of the meat and then drips through those holes and drips away into whatever receptacle you have. And that gets rid of the meat, the blood, enough that the meat is now able to be boiled, able to be roasted, whatever you want to do with it is fine. So that's why the meat that we purchase in the store, the kosher meat we purchase, has already been salted. That was not always the case.
Yeah, I can remember.
You buy meat that has been unsalted, and it's your job to salt it.
Like a board on an angle.
That's the other way to do it, right? A board on an angle, yeah, rather than holes in the thing. The board on an angle, so the blood will roll down right. The board. That's the other way to do it, right? Right.
I didn't. One time, this when we first started to keep kosher, something came up, and I thought, "Oh, I'm not salting." I didn't realize. I don't know what I realized, but then something was told me. I thought, here I think I'm keeping kosher, but I'm really not. But then Rabbi told me the meat is already salted.
That's a relatively recent development, meaning, 30, 40 years old, that development where the meat is no longer sold unsalted.
Nice.
That's a relatively new development. Now, it used to be that the salting was done by the local butcher, which means that the animals were slaughtered in whatever slaughterhouse it was, wherever in the United States, wherever the slaughtering was done. Then the meat was trucked to cities, and it was not yet salted. And then it would get to the city, and the local butcher would be responsible to salt the meat. And here you have the issue of how many days is it since the animal was slaughtered prior to the meat being salted. And we have a rule that the meat really needs to be salted within 3 days of the slaughtering of the meat in order for the blood to be able to be gotten out properly and not to become embedded in the meat to the extent that it cannot be removed. The salting process has to take place within 3 days of the slaughtering of the animal. There is a way to restart the clock, meaning if the salting process has not yet happened and we're holding already approaching 72 hours since the slaughtering of the animal, and that is to hose down the meat. To hose down the meat that washing of the meat with cold water, not hot water, cold water, will restart that 3-day deadline of allowing the salting process to work. There's a difference of opinion exactly what that does and how it works, but it's enough that it prevents the meat from getting to a point where the salting process will no longer work. And therefore, it was not uncommon in the United States for rabbis of communities that were a little bit out of the way, other than New York or the large Jewish communities, but smaller Jewish communities, where a truck full of meat would be passing through and needed to be hosed down. Rabbi Emanuel Feldman will tell you that it happened regularly, and he would have his rain gear and his boots, because it was a messy job. Uh-huh. You have to get up these tractor trailers, right? And he'd have to hose it down. He'd have a truck stop. They would go to a truck stop. There would be hoses there, and he would hose down the meat. There would be certificates that the truck drivers would have that were signed by rabbis that would say when the last time the meat was, when was it slaughtered, when was it washed, and that was necessary in order to establish that the meat was in fact kosher, because the salting was not done at the slaughterhouse, the salting was done when it got to the local area. So if the meat was going from somewhere in Oklahoma to Savannah, and the truck passed by Atlanta, and it was approaching 72 hours, they would have to stop and call Rabbi Feldman to come and hose down the meat. Of course, the trucker wouldn't be trusted to do it because the trucker is not Jewish. So it would have to be that they'd have to call the rabbi. And that was part of the job of being a rabbi in a remote city. That was a not unusual thing to be called. That has now changed, and the reason that has changed is because now the salting is done on premises at the slaughterhouse. So therefore, the meat isn't even leaving the slaughterhouse until after it has been salted, which makes it more difficult for a person who wants specifically unsalted meat, let's say for a low-sodium diet, and wants to instead roast their own meat. It has become more challenging because it's not showing up at the butcher pre-salted. Unsalted. It is now showing up salted, pre-salted. So it's a bigger problem. What's that?
We've lived all these years with it. And maybe it's different for us Jews.
Okay. I don't know. But now, for example, when I learned Shechita, when I was in yeshiva, I do not have Kabbalah in Shechita. I've never actually done Shechita. I don't know that I would have the stomach to do it. But when I learned the halachos of Shechita, and I went to go see Shechita being done at the slaughterhouse, Baltimore actually has a slaughterhouse, and I went to watch the process, and it's a really fascinating process, the whole thing. But I spent most of the day in the slaughterhouse itself. Adjacent to the slaughterhouse was the room in which they salted the meat. And that I went into for a short period of time. I didn't see that much of that. Most of my time was spent in the slaughterhouse itself. But adjacent, they have the salting going on. So right there, on premises, the salting is going on before it's packaged and sent out to wherever it gets sent out to. So that's a relatively new phenomena that they do it that way, which means that when you're buying the meat in this store, when the store gets it, it's already been salted. You're buying it, and it's already salted, and there's no issue at all. The primary exception to this is the liver. The liver, you can buy liver, well, let's backtrack. Liver has an abundance of blood, more so than other organs. The Jews are fond of their chopped liver, and liver has an abundance of blood. And the Gemara tells us that salting will not be enough for a liver. The liver needs to be roasted over a fire in order to remove the blood. Salting will not be sufficient for a liver. As a result, so when they sell liver, you can buy prepared liver, where they've already roasted the liver and then they prepare. When you buy chopped liver, so that's liver has already been has been prepared properly. It's been roasted and then chopped and made into whatever salad they have, adding eggs or whatever they make it with. That's one thing you can do. But if you buy a raw liver, then by definition, if it's raw, the blood is still in it. And since you want to prepare the liver yourself, that means that it's going to have the blood removed. So in order to prepare liver, it has to be roasted over an open fire, which, because there is blood dripping out, needs to be done in a specific manner. Meaning you can't just use the same utensils you would use for all of your kosher items in your kitchen. And people who do want to do this, or people who do this regularly, have a grate that they use specifically for liver. They usually have a fork or something like that they can hold the meat with, that they specifically use for koshering liver. I remember my mother doing it, koshering liver, and last summer Rabbi Alt made a very nice presentation, broiling the liver right there for everybody to see. The smell is great, unless you don't like liver, but the smell is great.
And I added in Israel.
so that is with liver specifically, but the other parts of the meat, either roasting or salting, will be sufficient. Yeah.
With the heart.
When you get into more exotic organs, so you have a couple of things working against you here in the United States. One is that there are many organs that the FDA does not allow to be consumed by the public. So therefore, it's not so simple to get those organs. So forget kashering it. You have the government not allowing them to be sold in the normal manner. You also have everything is based on consumerism. So it's got to be profitable to be sold. So those organs that there isn't a large market for, they're simply not prepared at all, because it would be a lot of expense to get it prepared, and nobody wants to deal with it. In the United States as well, the common practice of the kosher slaughterhouses is that only the front of the animal is kashered and sold as kosher meat. The hindquarters are sold to non-kosher meat sellers. This is because in addition to the blood, you also have traburing, which needs to be done. Traburing means to extract from the meat the different types of fats that are not kosher. There are kosher fats and non-kosher fats. But the non-kosher fats, which are called chelev, have to be cut out of the animal, as well as some of the major arteries, the very large arteries and...
Nerve, sciatic nerve.
Remember? No. That's true, too. We'll get it. No, but we'll get to that as well. But no, in terms of blood, not vessels.
Veins?
Large arteries. Ones. Arteries and... What are the other large...
Veins.
Okay. The large ones, thank you. The large ones need to be removed as well. There's different ones that have to be removed. Other ones don't have to be removed. The hindquarters of the animal has far more things that need to be removed from it. Aside from the gidanasha, the sciatic nerve, which also has to be removed. So there's just a lot there. It requires a certain expertise to properly traber, to properly cut out the parts that are not permitted in the hindquarters of the animal. Whereas the front of the animal, although there's a lot of things to be done there as well, it's a lot simpler. And therefore, in the United States, again, because it's all based on profit, it's all based on that. It's not profitable to deal with the hindquarters of the animal. That's simply sold off to a non-kosher meat seller, and only the front of the animal is sold. So that already limits you dramatically in what you're going to be able to eat in the United States. In other countries, in Israel, then a lot of these things are more accessible. Right. And there are specific rules. The heart, the spleen.
Right. Can it be cooked with the liver or separately?
So no, separately. Separately. All these things are separate.
The heart also?
Yeah, the heart is a separate way how to prepare the heart. The spleen. We talked about we discussed the udder of the animal. I think we did discuss udders at one point. We talked about
it. Mention it again.
Yeah. Each organ in Shulchan Aruch, there's another discussion about each organ of the animal that has complications to it. Even the brain has a discussion because the skull gets in the way of properly kashering the brain. So there's discussion. The intestines, all these things, in order to prepare them properly, take a certain expertise. The udder, as we mentioned before, it's not a blood issue with the udder, it's the milk that is internally in the udder when the animal is slaughtered. The udder is typically full of milk. Interestingly enough, that milk is pariv. It is not dairy. It's pariv. Because since it was inside the udder when the animal was slaughtered, it is considered to be part of the animal and not considered to be milk. And therefore it is pariv, and theoretically one could boil the udder in its own milk and it would be kosher. However, there are rabbinic rules against that. And again, in preparing an udder for proper consumption, kosher consumption, requires a method of getting the milk out of the udder after the animal has already been slaughtered.
Why wouldn't it be fleshic then?
That's a good question. So
I'm looking for this.
Yeah. Have you ever wondered why eggs are not fleshic?
No.
But,
well, same question.
Right? An egg,
yeah.
Right, came out of the chicken.
The chicken.
It should be fleshic, but it's not. Why isn't milk fleshic?
I never thought about it.
It came out of the animal, yeah. Right? So there the Torah says milk is different than meat. But these things are all coming from the animal. So your question is well taken. It's discussed how we know that the milk that has not come out of the udder is neither milk nor fleshic. It is parv. A whole discussion about that. So at any rate, the because of the blood inside of the meat, that's why you have the salting process. That's why you have the roasting process for the liver. Roasting could be done to other meat as well, but as we said, that's not usually needed in the way that our meat is sold, because it already has been salted prior to coming to the stores. Now, there are all kinds of problems that could come up with salting meat. For example, what happens if you salt the meat and then discover that the brine, which would be the liquid that comes out of the meat with the salt, etc., and the blood and all of that, did not run off as it was supposed to. Instead, it pooled, and the meat is sitting in that pool of blood and salt and whatever other liquids are there. That's a problem. That's similar to boiling the animal in its own blood. That's an issue. So there are other things that could happen, and of course those things happen. If a person is salting, then they should ask their LOR, the local Orthodox rabbi. A part of being trained to be a rabbi includes being proficient in these laws, the laws of salting an animal, and how to troubleshoot if something goes wrong. So that's basic, it's not basic, but it is, any rabbi needs to know that, otherwise they can't have smicha. So, that used to be a common thing. Today, many times, people grow up and they've never seen it because we buy our meat, it's pre-salted, they've never seen it happen. But really, it's something which was always done, and every mother taught it to their daughter. It was a very common thing to know how to do. Now, when meat or chicken is prepared rare, so it is not uncommon to cut a piece of meat or chicken that has already been salted and find red inside the meat or the chicken. And that often scares people, and they say, is this blood? Because wasn't this kosher? Didn't I buy kosher meat, kosher chicken, which means it's already been salted? And yet I cut it, and there's red inside, and that scares people. However, the truth is that the Gemara speaks about that. That red is not halachically blood. Whatever it is, scientifically or medically, but halachically, that is not the blood that the Torah is talking about. When the Torah talks about blood, it's talking about a thicker, deeper red substance, not this lighter, thinner red that you find when you cook something rare. So there's nothing wrong with that. If you like your chicken or your meat rare, and you serve it, and you cut into it, and there's red in it, it's fine. If you bought kosher meat that has already been salted, that is perfectly fine. Now, getting to Bert's mother, alayhi shalom, so it depends what type of meat or chicken she was serving. You see, if you buy meat that has not yet been salted and you want to get the blood out, that requires roasting, and you got to roast it properly. But if you're buying meat that has already been salted, so then you don't have to cook it well. You can cook it rare, and it's perfectly fine to be served as, even though you'll find residue in there that looks red.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'll tell her later.
After 120 births.
Right. But that does scare people a little bit. You'll cut it up, and it's all red. Like, am I allowed to eat this? But it really is. It really is fine. That is fine. It's not a problem whatsoever. Okay, any other questions on
the... By the way, my mother, blessed memory, was incapable of cooking a steak.
Oh, really?
She cooked shoe leather.
Shoe leather. But she was a good baker.
Oh, really?
Not a goodies.
Any other questions on the salting or the roasting process?
Wish there was a prohibition of all those feathers that they don't.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Butchers used to have a flame thing, and they'd go like that, yeah. And then it came off easy.
Let me address the feather thing, and then I'll get to your question. The reason for the problem with feathers is the following: the way that non-kosher slaughterhouses process chickens is they kill them, then they run them through either boiling hot water or some other type of heat. They heat them up very, very, to a very high temperature. That causes the feathers to come out very easily. When they're very, very hot, you can brush them vigorously and the feathers will come off, and it will not damage the skin of the chicken. So you can sell the chicken and it looks beautiful, looks nice the way people want to see it, and the feathers are gone. But that can only be done with a high heat applied to the chicken. The way they do is they heat it up very quickly.
So that the butchers, I mean,
they're trying to not cook it. They don't want to cook the chicken, but they want to heat up the external part of the chicken to the point where the feathers will come out smoothly and easily and not affect the skin. We can't do that. The reason we can't do that is because if you heat it up, then you cook the blood. So we can't do that. So therefore, we have to wait to remove the feathers. Either we have to do it without heat, or we have to first salt it, and then somehow remove it. It's hard to do. It's a difficult process. So as a result, the defeathering of kosher chickens has been notoriously worse than the defeathering of non-kosher chickens. That's a common issue. It's a common issue. The R&D department of Empire Kosher Chicken did discover, I heard this from Rabbi Heineman in Baltimore, did discover that if they change the feed of the chickens from, now I do not remember where they started and where they ended, either from corn to soy or soy to corn, I forget which way it was, but if you change the feed of the chickens, then the feathers will more easily come out in cold water than the other way around, than had they not used that feed. So evidently, this is what I heard from Heinemann a number of years ago, they changed the feed, which made it easier for the feathers to be removed. But evidently, it's still not a perfect process. Now, you understand that if it wasn't for our consumerism, then they wouldn't care that the skin doesn't look nice, and they would vigorously brush it and get off all the feathers, and the skin would look cracked or not so nice, or whatever it is. But they can't do that because then it won't sell. Nobody's going to buy chicken that looks like it's gone through a thrashing. Right? No one's going to buy it. So the consumerism works against us here, that they want to make it look good, and the better of two evils is that the skin be intact and there still be some feathers, rather than all the feathers are gone and the skin looks all beat up. Yeah.
I wonder how much salt does it take, say, for a chicken? Let's say you got a whole coat. I never did see this stuff. So say you get a whole kosher chicken and you put it on the slanted board or on a perforated rack.
Yeah.
How do you keep the chicken whole and then sprinkle?
You can. You need a lot of salt. You need a lot of salt. The salt has to cover everything, the entire surface of the chicken and the cavity, the inside cavity of the chicken.
I mean, cover it so you can't see the skin to that
point? I wouldn't say it's like that. It's there's salt all over.
A couple of cups and a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of salt.
It's everywhere.
It's a lot of salt. It's a lot of salt.
Well, after they received the Torah, did they have to follow all these rules? Yeah. And they had a good supply of salt?
Well, that's one of the explanations for why we eat milchik on Shavuos, because the preparation of meat is complicated.
Oh, right.
It's complicated. Besides the slaughtering, but getting rid of the blood and getting rid of the fats and getting rid of the artery. There's a lot that has to be done in order for meat to go from live animal to your plate. So that's one of the explanations for why we eat milchik on Shavuos. Where preparation of cheese or milk, although of course there's always laws, but it's less complicated. Okay, so that's the thing with blood. Again, there's a lot more to it. One day we'll have to put on that presentation again. I thought it was very informative. I enjoyed it very much watching just watching them do it. Just when you see it happening, so you get a whole different perspective on the whole thing. Whatever, you're afraid to go. Okay. Yeah, but anyway, so that's the story on this. Okay, so it's a little early, but we are going to end a little bit early tonight. And Mirtz Hashem, next week we'll pick it up with Perek Yocheseh, chapter 18. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.